This is Danny and Dusty.
Merengatang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All fellows with monkey sounds in there called go.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon.
Hey, welcome in. Happy Wednesday. It's a wrestling Wednesday. Oh, yeah, brother. How's everybody doing on this glorious wrestling Wednesday?
Oh, I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. I'm living the dream. Everything is awesome. Everything is awesome. Lego Movie. Oh, no, Chris Pratt, pretty good.
Me, look, it's a banger.
Okay. Speaking of banger movies, tried to watch Deadpool Wolverine with my wife last night. She hasn't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah.
I've obviously seen it. It's the second time I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
The cameos in that movie, like the first time you're like, oh, wow. It gets better the second
you
watch through.
Like, you realize how many things are happening.
They hide so much in that movie.
Ryan Reynolds said that they did a couple hundred Easter eggs. And he goes, there's still a lot that, like, even the biggest Marvel fans haven't found.
Yeah, and there's a lot in there, and he acknowledges some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then I noticed that because I watched the Welcome to Wrexham, the Rob McElhenney, Ryan Reynolds bought a soccer team in Wales thing. And in an episode, they have Rob flies all the way to London to film a scene for the movie. Mm-hmm. They cut him out of the movie.
Uh-huh.
They cut him out of the movie. And when you realize what he's actually dressed as, it's like you didn't need to cut him out of the movie.
No.
He was going to be wearing a mask. I wonder how many like stars are just behind masks and you don't even know.
I mean, people like they were pretty quick to figure it out, but like one of them is his wife.
Yeah.
Is Blake Lively,
which
good for you, I guess.
Yeah. You don't need to hide her.
Yeah. Maybe don't put her behind a mask.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the Easter eggs that my wife found that I had no idea about, because he said, what show was she? Gossip Girl.
Yes.
She was in Gossip Girl. And he said, there's, you know,
the 206 bones,
220.
When I'm watching Gossip Girl?
Yeah. She's like, oh, his wife was in that. And I was like, that's a nice little one.
Well, he does. There's
a lot of Canada references.
There's seven different references, I think. Six or seven different references to Blake Lively
really?
In the movie.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
Very gory.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, the opening.
Not for kids.
The opening scene is. The hooting and hollering that came out of the opening scene, the credit roll in that movie, was unbelievable.
I think he's really funny. He has a big boomer bust.
Yes.
Resume.
Yes, from Green Lantern to Deadpool.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm in.
Look, people like say him. He plays the same character and everything. I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So does Robert Downey Jr.
So does Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he's just dressed as a dude, playing a dude, disguised as another dude.
Oh, my goodness. Did you see the woman?
The thread? Yes.
There is a woman who had never seen Tropic Thunder before, and she had never even really heard of Tropic Thunder, and she just did like a thread of, I'm watching this movie. Wait, what? And she's a black woman, and she thought Robert Downey Jr. was hilarious.
Yeah.
Playing a white guy as a black man because she understood. And that's the thing that I was like, okay, we can still make movies like this, because she didn't really know the premise of the movie or anything about it. And she understood the satire of making fun of
that
right there in method acting. It
Lazarus.
Wasn't because there's a lot of people that are like, Robert Downey Jr. in blackface. It's like, no, you have to understand he was mocking method actors to the nth degree.
Yeah. And he went, they went so far beyond blackface. That's what makes it great.
Yeah. Yeah. But then she didn't realize Tom Cruise was even in the movie.
She's like, wait, what? Yeah, Lex Grossman.
And so she went back and she.
Lex Grossman.
She said that she's like, I thought that was like a no-name actor.
One hit wonder.
Yeah. And I couldn't understand why he hasn't gotten more acting jobs. Well, turns out you got a good eye for talent, because that was Tom freaking Cruise in Tropic Thunder.
I still maintain it's the best role ever.
Oh, I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
He said he would not do the movie without all of the accoutrement, as it were, of makeup and fat suit and everything and the big hands. But yeah, no, the "we do not negotiate with terrorists" line still to this day is
just the dance scene. Like, that was good.
Apple bottom jeans. Yeah. I mean, come on.
That the whole movie, it's made of, it's not just the stars. It's not just Ben Stiller, Robert Downey Jr. or like a Tom Cruise, but they had so many great character actors. Like Danny McBride is a phenomenal character actor who's now become a star based on the characters that he's done. But Danny McBride may be one of the best actors to take a movie from good to great. Like just a comedy movie from just take it from good and then kick it up a notch to great. Because without him and Hot Rod, Hot Rod is just a weird, quirky Andy Samberg movie, right? But he kicks it up a notch. Tropic Thunder, he kicks it up a notch.
Nick Nolte pyrotechnics guy. As Four Leaf Tayback.
Yeah.
What do you mean your hands aren't gone?
So good.
You're not Four Leaf?
No.
It's a great movie.
I tweeted it out this weekend. I can't think of a movie I would rather go back and watch for the first time more than Tropic Thunder, because it's before trailers gave anything away. It's before online communities like showed every single Easter egg and every appearance and every little thing. It was a comedy that was really in the vein of like Mel Brooks, which is my favorite. It smashed through every barrier, every wall, did not care about anyone's feelings or anything about anything because it went so over the top. And you just went in. You went into that movie not really knowing or having any idea. And then it's a movie about a trailer about a movie about a trailer to start. And you're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
It like when it devolves into them actually inserting into the jungle.
They kind of Tarantino'd it where you didn't know really what was happening.
No. until it gets to like halfway through the second act. And then you're like, okay. McConaughey in the TiVo.
Yeah, dude.
Like, what do you mean you don't have any TiVo? Like, just the dumbest possible things that were just like, but stepping on the landmine and then grabbing the head. Like, it was just like, what is happening here?
It's a good movie.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a good movie. I think the only thing, like, but you mentioned Mel Brooks movies and Mel Brooks comedies were largely based on making people feel uncomfortable. And, you know,
nothing more than Blazing Saddles when he rides into town on the very first time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
You want to watch somebody under the age of 28 squirm?
But it is.
That movie on.
No doubt about it. But it in that scene, obviously at that time, throwing the N-word around like they were.
Oh, yeah.
It was highlighting ignorance.
Yes.
Right? Same thing with Tropic Thunder when they're using the R word and they're throwing
the R word around.
And you're just like, boy, this makes me feel uncomfortable. But then you realize, oh, wait, they're just highlighting how dumb these Hollywood actors are. And it also...
Simple Jack? I mean, good Lord.
Where you're going for artsy. And it was like,
Well, I mean, that was, you know...
I Am Sam.
It's a shot at Sean Penn.
In I Am Sam, yeah. Yeah, like, they are taking purposeful shots on being like, no, you're not being some great artist. You're being an idiot.
Yeah.
You know? And that's satire. And it is highlighting your times and the idiocy of your times, which also, great movie to rewatch, Idiocracy, because they do the exact same thing. And now you're watching and going... Oh God, we're actually there.
It's what plants crave.
Yeah. Well, dude, I had a moment when we were flying back from LA where, God, what is it called? Fuel TV or something like that. Mm-hmm. They had it on in the airport. And basically it is exactly what Dax Shepard is watching. Well, everybody in Idiocracy is watching, where guys just get kicked in the junk.
Oh, yeah.
My son thought it was the greatest thing ever. And when people are just sitting there.
Ouch, my balls.
You're watching this TV. It had no sound on it, but everybody's flights are delayed, and everybody was just watching this one TV, and people just chuckling. And I was like, we are living in Idiocracy right now. Like, this is an airport.
To drive it home a step further, Dusty, what am I wearing on my feet right
now? Crocs, yeah.
That is the shoe of a little-known company
that
was saved by the movie Idiocracy because they sold them, like, hundreds or thousands of pairs for all of the prisoners in all the prison scenes. They're all wearing Crocs. They were just a little tiny company that was on the edge of bankruptcy and ended up saving them.
Yep, we're there, man.
Such a random, random thing. Like, all of and now they're a massive company. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I can wait all day, baby. Do you remember that line? She pays him to wait.
No.
I can wait so good.
Oh, yeah.
I can wait so good.
Oh, man.
Upgrade.
Dude.
There are 3,424 matches for Upgrade.
Mm. Yeah. Now you're getting into some of them I just don't really.
That was the name, really that know. Was the name of her pimp.
Oh, that's right.
Upgrade.
Oh gosh. All right, we'll get there. We'll get to comedies coming back around.
Oh,
we had
this
conversation last week. All right, let's get the show on the road, shall we? We got some sporting that we need to sport.
There's lots of sports.
We got to sport so hard on today's program. We will talk about the hometown team, the Portland Trail Blazers. Mm. We got some NFL newsies and notesies going around. There is a question that I have about the transfer portal and as it pertains to quarterbacks, because there's one team that it came out today, they desperately wanted to hold on to their quarterback. And I said, really? Really? And I think it may say about the transfer portal and how it may shape college football's 2025 season. But where we start, let's get to that hometown team. Boy, oh boy, we said that game may matter, and the Blazers, they sure played like that game mattered for May. Definitely not for January. This is Danny and Dusty on The Fan. Hometown team, the Portland Trail Blazers, fall to the Brooklyn Nets last night, 132-114, a game that we said, hey, this is going to have implications moving forward. Both teams with 13 wins heading into the night. Now, the Blazers hold an advantage as it pertains to lottery balls. 13-26.
Fall is a generous term you use there.
Yeah, okay.
Fall to the Nets.
Face planted. Against the Nets, 132-114. That 40-point first quarter that they allowed really kind of set the stage for what kind of game that was going to be.
Holy crap.
But there was a bright spot. Scoot Henderson, he found his three-point shot. That road trip, he was like, hey, guess what? I can shoot. And 8 of 10 from beyond the arc for Scoot.
I mean, it was bonkers. He starts 6 of 6 from 3. And the sixth one, I think it was the fifth or sixth, he just rattled in and it hit every single part of the rim. But he hits his first couple, and I was like, all right. I mean, well, he starts the game off first. His first bucket is a putback dunk. Second bucket is a three, and then it's another putback, but off the rim. And I was like, oh, okay. It's going to be a nice little game.
I also like the 6 assists, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all of them are created equal. You get pummeled like that. My question as I was watching that game kind of play out, I mentioned 40-point first quarter, mm-hmm. right? And that was like the tone setter that this isn't going to be a game where there's a lot of structure in it. And we talked about this last week when you brought up the Mike Richmond quote that mm-hmm. Scoot gave him, where he plays better without structure mm-hmm. and he can just kind of, for lack of a better term, street ball.
Yeah, freelancing. Yeah. AAU.
That kind of felt like what we were watching mm-hmm. right there. And that's where I have hesitations for Scoot unlocking something is that game went sideways immediately for the Blazers. And at that point, that's where he can kind of play his game and be more effective and comfortable.
And it's a high possession game. You get one team gets up 90 shots, the other one gets up 86, and that includes 18 free throws from the Nets and 24 free throws from the Blazers. That is a lot of possessions.
Okay, took forever.
Yeah, I mean, it was that, and I mean, they get up and down the floor. Like Jordy Fernandez wants that Nets team to play fast. They want a lot of possessions, which it seems kind of counterintuitive to for bad teams. Bad teams typically want to limit the possessions, but you know, there's some viability out of them. So the Blazers finish with 97 shooting possessions, the Nets with 95. That's about 10 more than usual.
Jeez.
So on each side, so 20 more total possessions in a given game. But and first of all, give Scoot the credit. He is like the thing that not just me, but I think people in the NBA have said is where is the game? Mm-hmm. Donovan Clingan had it in like game 12 or 13. Shaden Sharp had it in like game 10 of his rookie year.
We're creeping up on 100 for Scoop.
Yeah, he's at 95, 94, 95, right around there. He's getting close to 100. I'm working on a 100 game write up on him, where he's at or where he's been and where he's what he's kind of done over his first 100 games.
You have to rewrite that?
No, I don't think so. You know, although it did bring his shooting percentage up from three points. So that's what going 8 of 10 will do for you.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good. But give him his credit. It was nice to see him do this. It was great to finally see him have this kind of a game. The thing is, like, how much of that was, number one, the opponent. Number two, how much of it was, like, this wasn't the, I think I'd rather see him have, like, a 27-point, 12 assist, 7 rebound kind of, you know what I mean? Like, have the more complete game. Because the shooting, that's been the, you know, the biggest like question mark as far as like, okay, how is he effective? But how much of that is, you know, get hot in a given night, and how much of this is like, hey, maybe he can turn a corner as a shooter. I'll tell you this though, outside of Tamani Kamara, he didn't have any help last night. I mean, Ant had a rough game.
Well, we need to talk about DeAndre Ayton.
Well, I was going to say Ant had a rough game, so he didn't get much from him. Shaden was checked out defensively in the first half, and then DeAndre Ayton was not there mentally. Physically he was there. Every other way, he was not.
There were multiple possessions. And we do need to acknowledge the tempo and pace of that game, not conducive to a big.
No, right? But it should be conducive for DeAndre Ayton because he is a guy who can run up and down the floor.
There were multiple possessions where he did not cross the free throw line on either end of the floor. He played between the free throw lines and just and it wasn't as if the ball wasn't getting down there. He just wasn't getting, he wasn't crossing the free throw line. And that is indicative of an effort thing. And it looked like, it honestly, to be quite frank, DeAndre Ayton looked like a guy who didn't give a rip about that game. And that's a concern because one thing that we know from DeAndre Ayton's time in Phoenix, mm-hmm. we've seen it in small spurts here in Portland, is that when he gets in that mode, it ain't a one-off.
No, and it wasn't like Chauncey Billups could just go to Donovan Clingan, because Donovan Clingan gets his forehead busted open, shows he's a hockey guy, comes back all stitched up. He's got a gash and a half.
How many did he get in there?
I don't know. It looked like 3 when I looked, but I couldn't really tell because I had to bolt for the postgame show. But then he goes down with the ankle injury, and we're still waiting to hear.
That's not good.
And every time I get a notification on my wrist right now, I'm like, is that it? Is that it? Is that it?
That's not a good sign.
No, it's not right now. But as it pertains to DeAndre Ayton, Channing Frye chimed in last night on Twitter. I'm watching the Blazer game, and it's gross. Watching a certain player absolutely bleep off his minutes is unreal. Please stop playing this person, Trailblazers. It's not, okay, there's a
that's the NBA thing, not naming names right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but also there's some context clues. Where did Channing Frye play college basketball?
Arizona.
Where did DeAndre Ayton play college basketball?
Arizona.
Okay. And you'd be like, well, what about the Brotherhood? Well, one of them is a Lute Olson disciple, and the other one's a Sean Miller disciple. It's like being a Hubert Davis guy and a Dean Smith guy. It's like, yeah, it's the same school, but it's different. You know what I mean? Like, Channing's not going to do this to Gilbert Arenas. Because Gil's his kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And look, Gil has been incredibly lazy in games. That man made the most out-of-pocket player in modern NBA history. And
there's nothing to dispute in that. You are correct, sir.
So, and look, I love Gil, but he's insane. But, I mean, Channing was not mincing words other than not saying the name.
But we all knew who he was talking
yes.
about.
And this is, I had a bunch of texts about this. Like, oh, this is, you know, this is an old head mad because, you know, DeAndre Ayton has made more on his one contract than Channing Frye made in his whole career. Yes, that's part of it. Like, and that is like, I talked about this on the post game last night. I think there is a real problem with younger players in the NBA getting obscene amounts of money. And I think that does feed into DeAndre Ayton to an extent and others. I think it feeds into John Morant and Zion Williamson and Ant Edwards and those guys who keep screwing up left, right, and center. Because when you have $100+ million right out of the gate, who's going to tell you anything?
Yeah, I think this has always been the problem, though, in all of the professional sports is that you have these guys. But is it? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it is getting bigger because you can look up and down first-round draft classes and you can say, boy, didn't work out. And there's mm-hmm. only a handful. Now, we'll have certain draft classes where you can cherry-pick and you can go, see, that draft class was great. But it's also like some of those guys are wired differently.
Yeah, that's the thing. Right? Is like, I was talking to a bunch of scouts were in town. Probably, I'm guessing to see Cam Johnson, the pro personnel guys, and talking draft with them. And I said, "What's the single biggest thing that you're looking for in the draft now? And young guys coming in, they're like, it's mental. It's all mental.
Oh,
like
yeah.
the tools are there. The kids are more talented than they've ever been. Like that's without argument." But they're trying to weed these guys out mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, like all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
More so, like, and it's not just like how smart are they? It's how smart are they on the court? How mature are they off the court?
Yeah,
like those are the two, like the intrinsic things. Like you're either wired that way or you're not. More and more teams that I've talked to are less inclined to take the more recent one, the Deontay Johnson
mm-hmm.
in the NFL.
Sure.
Talent's overwhelming. It's like a lot. Like it's why you're not seeing teams take on Ben Simmons or Zion Williamson because they're just like, no. And that was the thing. This is the total derail. Watching Ben Simmons play basketball last night, I was reminded about he's one of the five best passers in the NBA, and it's not close. He had 8-9 passes that would have been one of the three best passes of multiple Trailblazers careers. And it was ho-hum. And it was just the most basic, simple, like he made it look effortless. And I'm just like,
but that's his body and the mentals right there.
Yeah.
Both of them.
And you're just like, and that, I mean, I had somebody else talk to me about DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton is the most gifted physically mm-hmm. big, probably in the league, not named Nikola Jokic. He is 7 foot tall. He is 270 pounds. He moves better at that size than anybody else in the league. And it's not close. And with the size and the weight, he has maybe the best touch in the league other than Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
He's one of the probably four or five best defensive rebounders in the league. And yet, he just tricks it all off because of what? And look, you don't know what's going on in his personal life, and I'm not making excuses for him, but it's like, this isn't the first time, man.
No, it's not. It's not the second or the third time that this has happened. But like, if you just go back to DeAndre Ayton's draft class, as we were talking about, like, there's guys in there that they got handed the big contracts to, and we don't have the same issues, right? I think this is an individual basis because top five picks were DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley the third, but then Luka Doncic, mm-hmm. don't have that issue with him.
Nope.
Jaren Jackson Jr., mm-hmm. don't have that issue with him. Trae Young, which you have that issue, but he still plays at a really mm-hmm. high level. So, I mean, that's not really the big issue. That's your top five right there.
God, Kings.
And then, yeah, right? Well,
four All-NBA guys and Marvin Bagley.
And Marvin Bagley. But then also guys that seemingly head on their shoulders aren't running into this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Sexton is head on his shoulders. Okay, skills not
lacks
near
the
there.
Talent, but yeah. like a complete lunatic basketball player.
But was a top 10 pick, mm-hmm. and that's not a money got to him and all that. SGA was the 11th overall pick in that.
Yeah, he's the one who slides in there.
He is pretty dang good. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have the Bridges brothers in there. They got their issues.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, Jalen Brunson was a second-round pick mm-hmm. in that draft. But He just got paid. Nobody's going to criticize Jalen Brunson for getting money in rolling over. In fact, the dude took less money, right?
Yeah.
So
a little bit different.
I think that we have these guys, right, that you're not wrong. Mm-hmm. There is a percentage of these guys where they get that money. That's all they wanted to do, right? Get the bag.
Andrew Wiggins did it, you know, got his money and said, I'm good.
Yeah. Said, this is what I worked for. This is what I wanted. I wanted to change my life. That comes down to the draft evaluation. The getting the mentals is the most important part. And if there's one thing that
it's so rare,
solid franchises do continually, is that part of their evaluation they knock out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Does the guy have it between the ears to thrive? And where you see the teams like the Rams right now.
Yes, right? 100%.
The Rams are a really good example of this. The 49ers are a great example of this. The Patriots, when they were actually good, they did this, and a big part of it was everybody's like, well, where do they find these guys in the fourth, fifth, sixth round? It was the mental part. They're like, physically, a lot of these guys can all make it, but where do they separate themselves? It's between the ears. And in the NFL, that's where you get your late round guys, your Puka Nacuas, or Julian Edelmans, right? But in basketball, it's really hard to do because you get such a small sample size. Mm-hmm. Because in college, these coaches, they don't know them very well either.
No, and that's where, you know, it's a belabor this point. It's where a guy like Cooper Flagg, who's a complete psychopath in the best possible ways, stands out so much. When it gets time, I'll tell a story that came from out of Hoop Summit last year that was the thing that locked me in on him just because it was so insane. But it stands out. Like, you just see stuff that is different. Like, it's not just the talent with him. Like, I have never been more certain of a player's success professionally than I am of him.
Hmm.
Like, I don't even think it's any kind of hot take. It's just when you've been around guys and you talk to enough guys and I've talked to other veteran players, all-star players that have played with him. And that they're going to be like first ballot Hall of Famers. And they have all said some version of he's different. And like that's what you're looking for as an organization. Yep. And it's a bummer that's not in an or a part of DeAndre Ayton's DNA.
As his texter on the Vancouver Forward text line, they nailed it. Marshawn Lynch got it right.
Take care of y'all chicken. You feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken in your mentals.
Mm-hmm. And Marshawn was a guy who figured it out.
Yeah.
He wasn't a guy who had it figured out, and then he did.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the DeAndre Ayton thing was. Also, get him out of Phoenix.
See if
that changes. He went to high school in Phoenix. He went to college at Arizona. Mm-hmm. He got drafted number one overall by the Suns. Get him out of Arizona, see if something changes. Right now, it's not looking like anything
else. You were swapping one problem, Yusuf Nurkic, who was degrading both physically and mentally as far as like his time here in Portland. And you thought, hey, DeAndre's the better talent. And even though he's crazy, like we know his production likely is higher. Hmm. And the insane thing is his production, even as bad as it has been more recently, is still better than Nurk's because Nurk has been benched.
All right. We got some texts coming in on the Vancouver Ford text line, and a few of them hit on what you just said right there. We'll get to those after Rust with SportsCenter. 503-864-6326 is the Vancouver Ford text line. Your dollar goes further at Vancouver Ford. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them online at VancouverFord.com. We were talking about DeAndre Ayton. The effort was noticeably poor, substandard last night.
Yeah, I mean, when you're shoulder-to-shoulder with De'Ron Sharpe and on a defensive or an offensive rebound, and he's on a defensive rebound, and he is at the rim dunking before you've crossed half court.
Not good, Bob.
That's a pretty...
Did Chauncey talk about that at all? Was he asked about it?
I asked him, I think the question was somewhere along the lines of, you've discussed or talked about spirit a lot this season. I said, didn't look like anyone but Scoot and Two had much spirit. What happened out there? And I just kind of let him go from there. And he didn't name DeAndre by name. I don't think he would.
Yeah.
But, on that exact play, when he didn't cross half court, I looked over to Chauncey, and he just put his face in his hands. It was like, okay.
Yeah. This text coming in says, I told you about Ayton when we got him. Terrible front office decision-making right there. Everybody except the Blazers knew not to touch Ayton. for the same reasons, his head. We also have to look at the larger picture of that trade, because one guy who had a lot of spirit, and I want every young basketball player to use him as their spirit animal, is Tomani Kamara, right? He's part of that deal. But also, Yusuf Nurkic and DeAndre Ayton, little flipsy flopsies there. I think what we're looking at, when you think of, you had the same issues with Nurk too, right?
Yes. I mean, that's and then some. It's just a different version of it. It's,
you were getting rid of an issue as well with Yusuf Nurkic not wanting to be here and giving, look, he got benched in Phoenix now.
Nurk, the other issue is Nurk was physically degrading. Like, from the moment he broke his leg, it's been a tumble down that hill.
And there was this idea, and look, the hindsight is 2020 with what went wrong and how it went sideways and the rumors that were going on, that DeAndre Ayton cared less about basketball and more about video games, you know, in his time in Phoenix. It was that.
It's the Kyler Murray of it all.
Is the change of scenery going to help him in getting him away from everything in his basketball career, from high school to college to the NBA, was all in the state of Arizona. Get him away, see if there is a reset. And largely, there have been some good stretches of play on a really bad team, too. Yeah. And that wears on guys as well. Nobody wants to be a part of a rebuild like
Nobody does. And you can talk about, well, that's how you get the shot in the NBA. You qualify, scrap, and look at Tumani. Yeah, Tumani's a, again, kind of going back to my point. Tumani's a 52nd overall pick. DeAndre Ayton's a number one overall pick. One of them has a...
Who got a second deal.
Yeah, who a near max. I mean... Again, there are talent evaluators in the league. A lot of them will tell you DeAndre Ayton is supremely talented. You can look at all of his numbers, all of his metrics, everything out there that will tell you that he is very unique. And you talk yourself into that, all of this, like, well, I told you he was going to be this. Like, they were trading one bad apple for another one, but the other bad apple looked really nice.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, it stayed nicer longer.
And... if we stayed nice for longer, we're talking about like a couple of weeks longer.
Well, I mean, they were out on Nurk in Phoenix last year.
Getting benched and just being like, look, there is no mistaking that the effort that you saw last night and
inexcusable,
how it is going to, kind of spiral in times. That has been DeAndre Ayton's kind of MO. Another text says, DeAndre Ayton at the end of the day is a legit top five pick who is good enough to get his second contract. Mid-range, competent free throw shooter, one of the best laterally moving big men in the league. Work with the weakness and expand on his strengths. Not too many guys like him walking around on the planet. Also, I'm patient with Billups, but losing at home as a 6-point favorite to a team that lost five in a row and a less talented roster and getting blown out, no less, is not encouraging. No.
I don't know if they were less talented than the Blazers last night.
Well, with the way they go.
No Jeremy Grant, no Denny Avdija, no Robert Williams. And Donovan Klingon not being available for long stretches because of two injuries.
And then the effort issue with DeAndre Ayton was a negative on the floor for you at times.
I don't know if they were less talented last night.
Yeah, and also, it's kind of the goal this year. They are.
Well, not only that, this is a roster that's not very good.
Yeah.
Itself was that is going. Ryan Rucco was calling the game for the Yes Network, and, what he said went on social of like, there might be some competing agendas happening on the floor tonight. And I was like, there you go. I appreciate that, Ryan. Little hat tip there.
Yeah. But I feel like this is a very slippery slope, though, that the Blazers are on with Ayton. Because when he decides he's going to check out, he checks out. And it's
It was crazy. And again, if you want to take a look at the expected win-loss now, the Trailblazers are now at 20.3 wins. And if you look at where they stand in the league, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Wait, hold on. 20 wins
expected.
Total?
20.3. That is their expected win-loss.
For the whole season?
Yes.
Out of 82 games?
Yes.
So that means they're going to win 7 of their remaining games? Is that what you're telling me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have signaled that this could be a very dark period that Blazer fans mm-hmm. will not like post All-Star break. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of basketball games left.
Ladies and gentlemen, they are about to hit 41 games in two games. Okay. Let's do some math for you real quick. Let's say they lose the next two. Okay.
Dang.
That would bump them up to 13 and 28 at the 41 game mark.
Oh, man.
That would mean that they're going to go 7 and 34 down the stretch.
That's not good. They'll peel off a couple that they should, probably lose one that they shouldn't.
I would put them
22, 23.
I think the number I would go with for the rest of the season is, I want to say 9.5. 8.5?
Okay.
8.5 more wins?
All right.
That puts them at 20. You know what? I'll say 9.5. 9.5 is probably a better number.
Final answer?
Yeah, 9.5.
Final answer.
Nine and a half wins.
Okay. Well, there we go. For those tracking at home, Brooklyn coming off the books, that is one of the easier opponents for the Blazers the rest of the way. The Blazers now have the fifth toughest schedule remaining in the entire National Basketball Association. The only teams with a tougher stretch with 43 games left, Phoenix, New York, Memphis, Nollins. So you got that going for you,
mm-hmm.
which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not a bad place to be.
All right.
If, you know, you like that sort of thing.
Well, I do. Because I've watched Cooper Flag. And I know what this season's all about. You got to be about that life, man. You got to be about that life. Okay. The Marcus Freeman halftime speech has been leaked as part of the NBC, or the Peacock docuseries they're doing.
Sure.
It's going to have to be a little bit more detailed if they're going to win the national championship. Mm. Next on The Fan. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish have got an uphill battle. They are playing the Ohio State Buckeyes Monday in the college football playoff national championship game. And Notre Dame fans going crazy over the halftime speech. And it was a good one that he gave his team. And during the semifinal game against Penn State. Marcus Freeman comes off as a guy that I really like him. I like him a lot. He's very humble. He does not seem like the most Notre Dame coaches, which can kind of come off as arrogant and hoity-toity. Marcus Freeman is a humble dude about the team. He's about service to the community. You know that Marcus Freeman will cancel meetings like regularly and say, you guys don't have meetings tonight, but what you're going to do is you're going to go out and do community service.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that whole giving back to the area. Apparently he brings in janitors at the start of every season and introduces them by name and is like, you guys better treat these guys the best because they clean up all your ass.
It's a leader of men thing.
He truly is.
Yeah.
And he's an interesting cat and I like him a lot. But I feel like his halftime speech is going to need to be a little bit more against Ohio State in the championship game.
It's a 7-point game. We get the ball first. So just understand, that's all it is right now. Now, what do we have to do to change it? We got to be able to run the ball, right? We got to be able to run the ball, right? And we got to stop the run. That's all it is, man. We ain't about to panic. They don't need to be nervous. It's a fight. It's a 7-point ball game, and we get the ball first. It's a fight. Go out there and fight.
I love that. His team hadn't scored a touchdown. They were down only 10-3 at halftime to Penn State. And they end up winning that game with 17 points in the fourth quarter. And guess what they did? They ran the ball in the second half.
Hmm.
When I heard that, I was like, that's awesome. And I think a lot of people were just like, hell yeah, inject that in my veins. It also helps. I think coaches should have dramatic music playing behind them in their halftime speeches.
I do like that.
You know, like you just like have the audio guy just like, pipe it into the sound system. Get on the aux cord there. Just go ahead and give you a little bit of a boost because the dramatic noise really, really amplifies that halftime speech. Here's the biggest issue that I have with what the college football playoff national championship game is going to be. Beating Ohio State will not come down to two things.
No,
it will not be. We need to run the ball and we need to stop the run.
No. No, it's not. It's not going to come down that. And I you know, we're a month past it now, but the Jimmy V week, the Jim Valvano speech, that's kind of what that reminded me of, in the sense of, do you remember what it was when he was a 22-year-old first-time head coach?
Oh, yeah. Running through the door.
Yeah. Yeah. Run through the door after waiting all that time. 3 minutes before we're ready to go. You got to focus on three things. Was it Rutgers?
Yeah.
It was Rutgers basketball, your religion, and the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
Because it came from Vince Lombardi.
Yeah. And he said the Green Bay Packers instead of Rutgers basketball.
Instead of Rutgers basketball. Yeah. Your family, the team, something like that. It had similar vibes of like,
family, religion, and Rutgers basketball.
But he said the Green Bay Packers. But it also, it was like, Marcus Freeman probably rehearsed it a little bit and tried to add a little oomph to it. And, you know, it landed, but, you know.
No, that 100% landed in that game. It 100% did. Like, that was, I think your Notre Dame bias is showing in this. That was good. Lincoln Riley's just sitting there drooling during halftime.
Yeah, no, we're not.
Marcus Freeman got his dudes going. This is a fight. You have to fight. And they did, man. They played that second half like a team that listened to their coach.
Sure. It just didn't. I don't know. I to your point, yes, you're gonna have to do more than those two things, but
way more than those things. But it worked for Penn State. It was the perfect speed for Penn State.
Yeah, because they can't throw the ball. The problem is that the team they're playing this week can.
Yep, that's gonna be Burgess.
I still what's the line on that?
They are gonna have to run the ball though, because I don't know how they're gonna score otherwise. But I like Marcus Freeman a lot.
I do too.
I think he is the most likable Notre Dame coach in quite some time. And I'm picking up what he's putting down. I like where they're going as a direction of a program. And gosh, that just, think of all of the big games that Notre Dame has lost.
It's up to 9.5.
It's up to 9. It's that number's probably gonna grow.
I'd say it's gotta get to at least double digits by kickoff.
Yeah.
It's got to.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I wish I would have taken that. Did it open at 6.5? 7.5?
No, I think it opened at 8.
Did it open at 8?
I think it opened at 8.
Okay.
But
it'll be
on the far left there.
Yeah, it's still too low.
On what it opened at, you're on Vegas Insider there.
Mm-hmm.
The opening line should be on the left.
No, it says their opening was 9.5 and it did not open at 9.5.
No, I don't think so. Boy. I can't wait though. I just like football games where everything's on the line.
Sure.
We may know how this is going to go. Yeah,
But stakes alter things.
What if Riley Leonard just becomes the human battering ram and Jeremiah Love just is jumping over literally everybody?
Stays healthy and shows just how much of a freak he is and turns into Saquon Barkley?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, number one, it's college kids.
They are. They are.
The
what if the flu takes over Ohio State?
Yeah.
What if Notre Dame is now over the flu?
Mm. They're inoculated now.
I don't think that
helps. That was their plan.
I don't think that helps with all of the injuries on the offensive line, but you never know. It could be. It could be. We have one team in college football that they wanted their quarterback back for next year. And a lot of people are going, Did you really? And I think that may signal what this transfer portal class of quarterbacks could mean for 2025. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.